Welcome back to Small Biz Survival. We're talking to some of the most positive people in rural America today. And today we're talking with Caleb Pollard, who is with Scratchtown Brewing in Ord, Nebraska. How big is Ord?
Ord is proudly 2112 in population.
2112. Hey, that's a good number. That's kind of a big town.
It is. We are big up in this neck of the woods anyways.
Yeah, definitely. So you're with Scratchtown Brewing. So do you have a beer with you for the interview?
I could grab one, but right now I try to keep happy hour tastings until after 4 o'clock, so we'll see how that goes.
Okay, but that's the standard.
I could grab one. It's across the bar here from me. So
always available. So you do have a relentlessly positive view of rural. What makes you optimistic about the future of rural today?
I would say there's several reasons why I'm positive about the future of rural communities, especially rural spaces. Is one, exceedingly we are told, I think, as Americans or as city dwellers that live in the cities, that you know all opportunity exists only in the city, and I don't think that's necessarily the case, and I think a lot of people are starting to realize that there's a lot of fulfillment and satisfaction to be found in other places that are more open, more laid back, and allow people to be, I think, greater contributors in the direction of their community, and they're making those choices to move back to those communities, but it has to be those communities that are willing to invest in their future and carry forth an attitude that investment strategy is going to be indefinite in nature. Is that, you know, we have to invest in our future or we won't have one. So I think there's a mindset shift in rural communities by and large, that they understand that there's that hungry group of individuals that want to move there. The other reason why I'm exceedingly positive about the future of rural is because I think it has a lot of very tangible benefits from a satisfaction and happiness factor that are finally being appreciated, that for a long time have been ignored. And people are starting to realize that if you spend 3 hours in traffic commuting, if you don't spend time with your children, if you don't sit around a dinner table and enjoy some of the more basic, quote-unquote, mundane aspects of a quality life, in my opinion, if you don't have those things, then people are starting to find out that it makes for a very miserable way of life. And, you know, I would say thirdly is that as long as the farm economy continues to be as strong as it is, I think that economically there's going to be, especially where I live, you know, there's going to be opportunities to continue to grow. But by and large, I think those are three overriding issues. But I think maybe one thing that brings them all together that's incredibly important is the technology that's enabling us to have this conversation, is that today you can broadcast a message and today you can make connections between those stories of opportunity with that audience that's hungry for it. And I'll even, you know, talk about our little business. Our business itself has a Facebook page following that is only 800 people, less than the city of Ord. And that will grow once we open our doors here in the next couple weeks. And I think for us, that those tools, even though they're only tools, tools can still be used for good. They can also be used for bad, of course, but they can be used for good to make a meaningful impact. And I think that from at least my perspective, when you bring those elements together, and then you have that tool such as the internet and the technology, the, you know, the social media technology that we have today, you can project a pretty important conversation to very receptive audiences that actually make a difference. And I've seen it as an economic development professional in my past life, and I'm now seeing it as a business owner. And, you know, that's one of the biggest reasons why I've enjoyed reading and listening to your work, is because it very much echoes that same topic point that I've been trying to make for years. So that would be one reason why I'm very positive about the future, or I guess three.
That's three. That's good. You know, better to have three than only one. So
right. Yep.
Let's talk about the brewery as a model for the future of rural. Your brewery is more than just a brewery. This is about more than just beer. Mm-hmm. Tell us what it's about and why you decided to do something on a larger scale than just make a living.
Just make a living. Well, first and foremost for us is that we're craft beer enthusiasts, and My business partners and I have lived an urban lifestyle, and we all chose to come back either to our roots or to somewhere that was similar to where we grew up, myself and my two business partners. And we did not come back together, nor did we know each other when we came to the community at the times in which we came to the community. But as we met each other and we started to talk about our mutual interests, it became very apparent that not only was a love of craft beer something that we wanted to pursue because of our experiences with craft beer around the world, but it was also because we wanted to be business owners. I mean, business ownership is a really, really exciting opportunity for me as a professional that I really wanted to get behind. And then taking something where you can be a craftsman and we craft beer and be a business owner and actually be the owner of that enterprise is something that very, very, very few of my my age cohort and younger have the opportunity to do, especially in the city. So from my standpoint, I was afforded an opportunity to chase my dreams at a very young age. I'm in my early 30s, 33 right now, and we really launched this endeavor 2 years ago. So at 31, we started the planning process to get to what is now a production brewery that will open up in a couple weeks. That was very important to us, being able to pursue our love of craft beer and do it from a business ownership standpoint in a very rural place was important. The other side of it is, I think, though, kind of the why behind why we're doing beyond those two items, and the why is that we wanted to give an opportunity for rural communities to say, this is a way to build your local economy. We're creating two jobs right out of the gate, two full-time jobs. We're creating another part-time job on top of that. Our overall investment, while is less than most larger scale breweries than what you would see, is still somewhat sizable for our downtown business district. And the other piece to it is that it provides a new market opportunity that doesn't exist up here. We don't have any breweries up in this neck of the woods, and we also happen to be in a highly recreational area. We're at the southeastern edge of the Nebraska Sandhills. We have four lakes and four rivers within 25 miles driving distance, and we have white sand beaches up here. So there's a tremendous number of recreationalists, tourists, hunters, fishermen, fisherwomen that drive up through this area, and we felt that that was an opportunity to capitalize on because we have no competition. And I think, I guess, the last point, too, is maybe looking longer than the time scale of our own lives, is we wanted to pass a legacy onto our children. My business partners and I, we all have children. There's seven kids in the three families that are involved in this endeavor. And we wanted to pass some form of a legacy on, if, you know, God willing, we're able to our children so that there is something more than just us. And I think that that's a lesson for us to think about as American citizens, is that very few people are thinking and talking in those types of terms today, and especially when you look at corporate America, where everything is focused on quarterly profitability, no one's talking about the type of legacy and long-term community building that's necessary, not just for rural communities to prosper, but for all of America to prosper. And to me, it's a little sad because not a lot of people talk in those types of talking that kind of language today, and that scares me because we have a time and a place in America today where we're looking at very short side gains, and we're not talking about what's the legacy we're leaving our children. Because I'm very afraid of what the current administration and the current generation in power is leaving to my generation and younger. It's a mess, and so maybe if we can be one small slice of change out in somewhere and be impactful in that manner, that maybe somebody will be inspired to do that somewhere else. And I think that there's a cascade effect that can happen from that.
One of the things that you and I have talked about by email is that there is a change that needs to happen for all of America, mm-hmm. and that we're actually, you and I both agree on this, rural can be at the forefront of making those changes and building a more positive thing. And I think it also ties into one of the things that I read a lot of the stuff from the placemaking people and the, you know, they're trying to build a new urbanism that is a more compact, dense, walkable, livable, sustainable future. And every time I hear that, I think it sounds like small towns.
Well, I agree with you 100%. I've always called suburbs a poor recreation of your small town environment. I mean, homeowners associations are a urban attempt to build community, and oftentimes they're not successful because they're not authentic, right? It's like almost like involuntary, voluntary participation, right? in rural communities, the thing that I get excited about that I think is something missing today is that because you're not anonymous here, because of the size of the community, and because oftentimes you're forced to be neighborly because that is the expectation, there's a lot of intuitive community building exercises that can come out of that type of mindset that is not just a winner-take-all type of mindset that you see so many other places. There's a lot more of a collaborative spirit in mind, and there is a more openness to listening to everybody's viewpoint regardless of their name, regardless of their demographic, regardless of their economic stasis or status. I mean, there's a lot of authenticity in community that is so missing from urban planning conversations as well as urban economic development conversations. And so I think rural America can not only serve as a model in that regard, but it has been a model for years in how community can be built. So I think from my standpoint, what I've always, you know, really tried to encourage my economic development professional friends from my past life in urban communities to do is to sit down and really understand what the power of a cup of coffee or a power of a beer on a one-on-one conversation can have with a constituent, because that might be somebody that will, you know, hoe the row, as they say, for you, or block and tackle, as we say up in Husker country, when it comes to getting community objectives done. And I found that the more intentionality you take in being authentic and really sitting down and talking to people, whether it's over a cup of coffee, over a beer, the higher the likelihood you see that success factor when you're trying to actually get something done. And so, you know, that's kind of maybe a meandering response to that. But I think you're absolutely right. There's a lot that can be learned from rural America.
Let's talk our economic development for a little bit, because you have the economic development past life there. You served also on your local economic development board there in Ord. Is that correct?
Executive director of the board, yep.
Yep. Okay. And then, so you've dealt with some of that economic development from the inside kind of stuff. And the thing that I've been intrigued about mostly lately is, what can regular people do? And what can people that think to themselves, I'm just a business owner, there's nothing I can do. What can just regular people do that influences positively the future prosperity of their town without being the executive director of the Economic Development Board?
That's a great question. And I wish I was able to have this conversation when I started as an economic development professional, because I think the nature of my response would have changed over time. A couple things that the regular Joe from the street or a business owner can do in their community is, first and foremost, pay attention and get involved. It doesn't take very long to read. I know it's boring, but sometimes it's important to read your council minutes or go to a city council meeting. You know, it may take an hour and a half out of your life a month. But being involved, I mean, if you want to see change in your community, you have to get involved. There is no other transaction that can happen. How you get involved is up to you. So paying attention and talking to your city council members, talking to your county board members, talking to your economic development professionals, your chamber professionals, and just asking what's going on, and then follow up and say, how can I help or how can I get involved? And from that standpoint, you know, it can be as formal as a board position or as a committee position, or it can be as informal as going to the coffee shop, and this is an important one. Going to the coffee shop and saying, I believe in these types of efforts, and I believe that they should be invested in and supported over the long term, because there is toxic attitudes that can come out of the coffee shop that can create conversation or can create a mindset that is not conducive to positive economic development outcomes. And so I think that you can get very formally involved and you can be very informally involved. And what people's level of comfort is with that is entirely up to them. The other side of it is this, and I'll cut to the quick on this too, because this has been something that you've talked about with, you know, the buy local campaigns and that sort of thing, is as a business owner, you do have to walk a fine line sometimes between being controversial and taking a stand. But what I would ask the question is it worth losing the long game because of a couple short-term customers on controversial issues? And the reason why I bring that up is it important to be vocal and support major community initiatives, even at the risk of losing customers? Because it is more important in the long run that your community survives or thrives than thinking very short term. And I know that that can be very hard when it comes to the bottom line with business owners, but I have a lot of business owner friends that refuse to take stances on particular issues because they're very worried about the short term gain. And I don't know if that's, that goes back to the legacy comment that I made earlier, is that, you know, if communities have to survive, they have to levy taxes. They have to invest in their future. The conversation is, or the debate in the community is how. But those things still have to happen. We still have to have schools. We still have to have healthcare. We still have to have libraries. We still have to have roads. We still have to have viable commercial business districts, especially in our downtown business districts, that are creating tax revenue to support all the quality of life aspects that we enjoy in rural America. But sometimes it takes a rural business the courage and the wisdom to step up and say, even if this loses me a couple customers today, I'm still going to support this initiative because it's important for the long-term health of the community. Because if the long-term health of the community is there, oftentimes those customers you lose are replenished by 2 to 3 customers in turn. And we have to remember is that, you know, positivity is the single, in my opinion, the single best indicator or index of positive business outcomes and positive health. I mean, there is a direct correlation between being positive and optimistic and actually having positive health and positive outcomes. I mean, that's positive psychology in a nutshell. It's, you know, that I just covered in about half of a second. But those are, I think, are important things that that we have to keep in mind, is that if we don't do those things, you're risking the future of the community altogether. And where else can you get more involved more easily and more effectively than in the rural community in which you're in? When, you know, you're not fighting against 500,000 people, you're fighting against, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 people sometimes. And it's easy to get noticed, it's easy to get involved, and it's easy to get engaged.
I just sit here and nod as you say these things, but the one that really stuck out for me was the idea of a positivity index. We're going to start this now. We're going to start rating mm-hmm. communities on a positivity index. And this is going to tell you, mm-hmm. this is going to be the number one factor to know whether your town will survive, is the positivity index. And the great thing is, it's one thing you can influence, and that you as people in your community can do, is you can go, well, you know, things are really way too negative around here, and we're going to start doing some things that are
totally
positive.
Totally.
You know, there's a small town near me that has, you know, they have eaten, I don't know how many city managers over the past 10 years. They have had, I don't know how many bloody community fights that were all but literally bloody. I don't think there have been any fist fights over it in the council chambers or anything. But, you know, a bunch of community organizations got together and painted the downtown light poles in bright and fun colors and mm-hmm. funky little designs, a different one from each organization. And I'm telling you, I think that painting the light poles has done more for their community than anything that the city government has tried to make happen in the past. It's just little things of showing some positivity and trying to change the direction or change the trajectory that your town is on.
Well, you're absolutely right, Becky. And I think one of the things that you brought up is the willingness to celebrate the small wins. I think a lot of times rural communities are so obsessed with that big home run that will save the future of the community. Well, they never teach. It's like baseball. The way I look at it, it's like baseball. They never teach themselves how to actually hit singles and doubles, so that when they're actually given that nice fat pitch down the middle, the breaking ball that doesn't break, they say, to hit a home run, they can't hit the home run because they haven't had any practice. And so we've taken that approach here over the years, is that we celebrate the small wins, and we focus oftentimes on small gains because it's a lot easier to create multiple small gains in a year, take 5 or 6 steps forward, and yeah, you may take 2 or 3 or even 4 steps back, but instead of trying to take, you know, 25 steps every 10 years and putting all your eggs in that basket, you're oftentimes seeing that there's greater inertia building over time as you focus on those smaller wins. And then all of a sudden you start looking around and there's this cascade effect. It's not just one business that's changing the attitude of downtown. It's multiple things going on. And I think that is one of the best ways in which to talk about community development is to stop focusing on these, you know, these sea change types of mindsets and really start focusing on those small wins, because over time they build that positive inertia that I think can be transformational. And that's what's important is people say, oh, what have you guys done in order that's so different? And I think, you know, one of the big reasons was, or big things was that we just really focused on those small gains, trying to really build those small cases and invest in small business. That's the other side of it too, rather than necessarily chase large corporate entities around and hope that they bail us out. So
you've hit on another one that I have now that we have to talk about this one now, which is Ord is a special case because, you know, you have all these wonderful assets and so that makes you different. And so anything that good that happens there, we can't take those lessons for name any other town. I think that's false because Ord started from somewhere and mm-hmm. like you say, started with small steps to mm-hmm. make the changes to get to where Ord is today.
I would agree with you. And I think, it started with back, I would say, 13 to 15 years ago, is an acknowledgement that attitudes had to shift first. Leadership had to follow out. I mean, attitude dictates outcome, in my opinion. And if the attitude was that, oh, this is a dying town and there's no future here and why would our kids want to come back to this town, then that's exactly the type of future you're going to reap. But if you take a step back and say, well, you know, I can walk to work in 5 minutes. My kids can walk from school to my business, which is 6 blocks away, and I don't have to worry about that situation. And you start to say, what do we have that we can be proud of? We live in one of the most beautiful places in all of the United States, and I believe that very, very firmly. We live with some of the best people in the world that treat you like family, and they take care of each other. Yeah, we have fighting just like every other town does, but ultimately, you start to index those positive measures and you say, how can we enhance and build around this and bring people to the community that want to be a part of this and then focus on the small measures? And, you know, 15 years later, you've got a full downtown business district where you've got multiple construction projects around the square that I'm listening to outside of my headphones now. And it gets me excited about the direction of this area and this place in general, because it's not just one thing going on, it's multiple things, and it started because of attitude a shift in attitude a long time ago.
I think we get, we have great examples of places that are doing really well that get thrown around in a very abbreviated form. Well, look how mm-hmm. great Ord is doing, or look at the, mm-hmm. the wonderful things that Woodward, Oklahoma does with entrepreneurs, what an entrepreneur-friendly community they are. We look at those examples where they sit right now, which is mm-hmm. kind of a mistake, because it's the, you know, it's the taking a long process to get to that point. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is it comes off a little bit, especially when it comes from a state agency. Why can't you be more like your brother is what it ends up sounding mm-hmm. like. You know, mm-hmm. you get mm-hmm. that kind of example thrown in your face. And so I think it's good for people to realize that every one of us, every town that has been successful, every small business that's been successful, didn't start in a beautiful, finished state. We all start in a messy beginning state, and we have to make it better from there.
It's just like business, Becky. There's no perfect time to start a business. Either you take the leap or you don't. And you can't wait for business cycles to support your theories or your thoughts about when the right time to start a business is. You just have to do it. And I think that that's exactly right, is that why can't you be more like your brother, the one that is on the honor roll and is quarterback of the football team, that sort of thing. And I've spent some time doing consulting over the years with other rural communities. And one of the first things that I ask when I step into those communities as a consultant, when we start doing our strategic planning, is I say, you're in these four walls, wherever we meet, with me. And I am going to give you an opportunity to, I'm going to give you an opportunity to sit down and think about why you love where you live. And the reason why I ask that question is everybody has several reasons why they love where they live. And even if they're they're working on an activity or a planning effort that is related to some community objective and they're working with people they don't get along with, when you start showing those responses of why people love, why do you love this town and why is this effort important, what they start to see is they have a lot more in common with maybe their nemesis or their rival in the community than they thought. And the point that I keep trying to hammer home when I do those activities is you came here because you cared and you told me why you care. Are you willing to work for the why and get beyond some of those interpersonal disputes that you may have that will prevent you from being successful. Because if you can pull together in the same direction, even with your rival or somebody you don't particularly care about, for the betterment of the community, what kind of impact do you think you will have? And it's almost always positive, and people, you know, respond very positively to that. So I think what, you know, from that, the comment that you made about where people start is take a step back and ask yourself why you love your community, and then ask, how can I help it grow up to be the community it needs to be when it gets older? You know what I mean? And you're right. The process of where we've been in Ord over the last, and I would say Valley County as well, over the last 10 to 15 years has been a very messy process. I mean, we've had some failures, some spectacular failures in that process. But I think one of the things that is remarkable about Ord that maybe can be a learning point for other communities is that failure has not shut down the wheels of progress. I mean, failure, I don't want to say is embraced. I mean, embracing failure is kind of like a weird thing to say sometimes, but what people do is they acknowledge that failure is part of the process of being successful. Failure is a learning tool. Failure is something that is a valuable teacher, and that incorporated into a community strategy, I think, is valuable. And other communities need to, I think, acknowledge that failure can be a valuable tool in community building, which sounds, again, very weird, but it's true.
None of us do everything perfectly.
Right.
All of us are going to have some failures, and how we react to them is a big determination of where we go from there. If you let one failure drive you back indoors and go never again, you don't ever get a second chance. You've shut yourself off completely.
Right. And I've seen communities that had one major failure. They invested in an enterprise that failed, and so they just chose to turn around and quit, and that was 20, 30 years ago, and now their community looks like a place that rolled over and died. And so I think what'll be always forever important is that you have to embrace that, if you can, embrace that failure, as weird as it sounds, in the same way that you would embrace success. Because success is I don't want to say success is easy, but failure is always harder, right? And reacting to that failure and overcoming failure is always harder than necessarily success. And I think we learn a lot more about ourselves when we fail than we do when we succeed.
Definitely. So out of all the different things that you've done, are there any things that you've learned that you kind of wish more people knew?
Yeah, that's a great question. I was a product of, I was a farm kid. I was spent the first 10 years of my life on a farm in the 1980s. And I think that that had a much more profound impact on me than I ever expected, and maybe some of the underlying reasons that are driving me to do the things that I want to do today with my business and you know, partially with my willingness to lead on certain objectives in our own community, is that I thought that communities, I don't think, even though if there's a crisis, I don't think communities, if they don't want to, they don't have to roll over and die. And I think the 1980s was a very good experience for me to realize that there are crises that happen. I went through two farm sales, watched my dad sell off a lot of land and a lot of equipment to get through the 80s, and we did. But I also think that it had a profound impact on my willingness and desire to make an impact, because I had two very contrasting experiences while living on the farm in the 80s, and that was one, this beautiful childhood that was very free and very non-structured. I had a very unstructured childhood, so I would leave in the morning and come back in the evening for supper and have a lot of adventures with my brothers out on the farm. Sometimes we were working, a lot of times we were working, but a lot of times we were out just exploring and playing and having an amazing time. And then that beautiful world was also contrasted with the realities of the economics of the 80s and watching your parents try and get through. I was old enough to remember those dinner table conversations about, you know, family finances, and you know, my parents may not know that I was listening, but I sure as heck was as an 8-year-old. So that was profound to me, I think, because I felt like we had to leave the farm partially against our will, partially for our will, or of my parents' will. And that was somewhat traumatic for me because I loved it. And so maybe this whole endeavor of coming back, you know, or coming to Ord and starting this business up is one of ways that I wanted to pass that legacy along, to create a long-term opportunity in rural America for not just me, but for my kids if they wanted that sometime in the future. So I don't know, it's kind of a convoluted answer, but I would say that if I wanted some people to know something that they may not know, is that living on the farm in the 80s was an incredible and also somewhat terrifying experience if you consider the economics of it all. So,
and from that, I think the most interesting thing to me from that is the very positive view that you have of rural today. Because the way you tell your starting story, it was not, it was not entirely a positive experience. And yet you still have this sense that we in rural communities, we have a future, we have a vital future to play.
Well, I would agree with you. Not only do we have a vital future to play, not just in the world around us, but I think in terms of human nature as well. I mean, I don't believe that mass urbanization is necessarily a good thing for the human psyche or spirit. I really think it's actually awful to have to compete with millions of other human beings for the same 800 square foot of space that they occupy in these megacities or elsewhere. You know, there's something to be said with a very visceral connection to nature and with your neighbor in a meaningful way. That has, I think, a long-standing positive impact on human lives. So, you know, it's proven human beings are social creatures, and the more positive social connections a human being has, real-life social connections a human has, the higher the likelihood of their happiness quotient, as they call it. And I think that you can have that experience in a rural community a lot easier than you can elsewhere. And so I'm positive because I think the positive aspects of growing up on the farm for me really dictate a lot of the positivity that I have today, because it was an incredible experience. And I got to go and live in the city, and I worked in big cities and worked in small cities and got to see the contrast. And for me as a person, my happiness was greater, you know, being out in the sticks rather than, you know, being in the city. So that's how it works for us, I guess.
Well, I think it works for a lot of people that way, and I think we're going to see more and more people make those kind of decisions in the near future. Caleb, thank you so much for taking time out of the almost ready to launch business today to talk to me and to talk to everybody here. Tell folks where they can find you online.
Excellent. Yes, I appreciate that, Becky. People can find us at scratchtownbrewingcompany.com. That's all spelled out, scratchtownbrewingcompany.com. Or they can find us on Facebook or Twitter, just doing a search for Scratchtown Brew or Scratchtown Brewing, respectively, and they will be able to find us and follow us on those social media sites. We're excited about getting open. We had our public hearing with City Council today, and we were approved for our local liquor license.
Excellent.
That's a very important step. And so we have one last step before we're able to open, and then we will be open and serving locally made craft beer in the Loup Valley of Nebraska. So we're excited about it.
That's very exciting. Congratulations on the launch, and the very best of luck to you and to the brewery.
Thank you, Becky.
Thank you.
Take care.